I use this word a lot, is relationship. And what is your relationship to diabetes? And, you know, when I say that to people, they usually look at me kind of funny, because they say, well, I don't want a relationship with diabetes. I don't want it. I don't have that choice. I don't have the choice not to have diabetes. But what I have the choice to do, and what everybody with diabetes has a choice to do, is how you relate to it.
Welcome back to the Healthy Diabetic Podcast. As always, before we get started, please remember that nothing that you hear on this podcast should be considered medical advice or otherwise. Please always consult your medical team before making any changes to your diabetes management. And one thing before we get started with today's guest, I just want to take a second and just thank everyone for being here. If you're listening to this episode, whether you've listened to multiple episodes, you have been here and listening for maybe years, or if you're brand new to the channel, thank you for being able to be here. Thank you for taking the time out of your day and listening to this episode. And I hope that you go back and listen to previous episodes, because these conversations need to be heard. These conversations need to be listened to. So many people out there are, you know, just frustrated and scared and feel isolated and alone, like I did when I was first diagnosed. And I'm just so honored and proud to be able to bring you these conversations every single week. All right, let's jump into today's guest. I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Mark Heyman. He has been type 1 diabetic since 1999. He is a diabetes psychologist and a certified diabetes care and education specialist. He is the CEO of the Center for Diabetes and Mental Health in San Diego. He is passionate about providing diabetes education and evidence-based mental health treatment and online programs to people living with diabetes. Mark received his PhD in clinical psychology from the George Washington University and completed his psychology internship at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. He is the host of the Live Free with T1D podcast, formerly known as the Diabetes Psychologist podcast. He has also written different books like Diabetes Sucks and You Can Handle It, Your Guide to Managing the Emotional Challenges of Type 1 Diabetes. Just a fabulous individual. I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this conversation. We tackled so much really, really cool mental stuff that I talk about a lot, but I don't get to go deep dive into because I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a doctor. So this was just a fabulous conversation. You definitely don't want to miss this episode. Let's get with Dr. Mark Heyman.
So I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes just about 25 years ago. It was June the 1st, 1999. It was my third year of college. And, you know, I got sick like everybody did. I started getting really thirsty, tired, peeing a lot. You know, it was kind of those classic symptoms. I remember waking up in the middle of the night one night and saying, you know, just one more drink of water and this will be all over. And, you know, as we all know, that's not how it works. So
yeah.
Eventually I went to the doctor, and you know, the rest is history. I was actually really hesitant to go to the doctor at first, because this was the end of my junior year of college, and I had plans to go to France for the summer that summer. Mm. And I was terrified that if I went to the doctor, they would tell me that I couldn't go. So I was like, my mindset was like, I'm going to push through it. I'm going to get through this trip to France, and then when I get home, I'll go to the doctor. Well, that didn't happen. I remember the one day I went to the doctor, June the 1st, I was walking to class. I just couldn't make it up the hill. And it was, you know, I just like, I can't do this anymore. So went to the doctor. They put me in an ambulance immediately. So it's student health, carted me over to the emergency room, which luckily wasn't too far away. And I was there for a couple hours. They actually let me go at the end. Like, after a couple hours, they brought my blood sugar down to, I think, 400. Didn't give me any instructions, but told me to go to the endocrinologist the next day. They made me an appointment. So I met the endocrinologist next day, who was a phenomenal lady named Ann Peters, a very well-known endocrinologist, that was randomly on call that night. And we had a great conversation. It wasn't great. It was, you know, pretty depressing actually, but she kind of gave me the rundown of diabetes. And at the end of our appointment, she said to me, "Do you have any questions?" And I was very timid. And I said, "Well, I have a ticket and plan to go to France for the summer in about 2 weeks. And I was about to say, I guess that means that my trip is canceled. And she's like, oh, well, you can absolutely go. So to my diagnosis, I got an airplane and flew to Paris and spent the next 2 months there. And I remember I knew nothing. I mean, I was taking MPH and regular insulin, and you know, my blood sugar would go low in the middle of the night, and I had no supplies. And it was a great experience. But looking back on it, I wish that I would have known a lot more about diabetes and what I was doing. But she was great. She monitored my blood sugars. Every couple of days, I emailed her, and I survived, and no worse for the wear. So. After I got back, I realized, you know, wow, this diabetes thing is not easy, and started looking for resources on how to manage just the constant mental strain of it. And I realized there was not a lot out there. And so that's kind of the genesis of how I became a psychologist, is I realized that there was this problem that I had that I couldn't solve. And I really wanted to solve it, and solving it didn't mean make diabetes go away, but it meant finding better ways to deal with the ups and downs and the constant emotional strain and highs and lows and all that stuff. So, I mean, the journey's a lot longer than that, but that's kind of the short version of the story, is I realized that there weren't resources that I really wanted and needed. And so I decided to be the person to make them.
Yeah. I love your story. I mean, like I said, I've been following you for a while, and as a diabetes coach, fitness coach, strength coach, nutrition coach myself, it's this thought that I keep having, and I think I heard you talk about it one time too. The thought about I feel like diabetes starts with your mental capacity. How are you? What are the words that you are constantly saying to yourself? What's your relationship with diabetes and yourself and the environment around you? What is that relationship? I feel like that is like the beginning steps to being able to live free with this diet, with this diagnosis, or with this condition, so we can live every single day. And like, I'd love your thoughts about that as being a psychologist working in the diabetes space and really talking about those things every single day.
Yeah. I mean, your mindset has to be in the right place. And I like what you said, and I use this word a lot, is relationship. And what is your relationship to diabetes? And, you know, when I say that to people, they usually look at me kind of funny, because they say, I don't want a relationship with diabetes. I don't want it. And I don't want a relationship with diabetes either, but unfortunately I don't have a choice. I have this thing that's in my life with me, and I have to manage it on a daily basis. And so, but the choice, and I don't have that choice. I don't have the choice not to have diabetes. But what I have the choice to do, and what everybody with diabetes has a choice to do, is how you relate to it, and what is your relationship with it? Just like, you know, you have a roommate that you don't like, you know, you can choose to avoid that roommate, and like, you know, but that's a pretty miserable experience. I remember when I was in grad school, I had a roommate who I really didn't like, and I didn't handle it real well, but I remember coming home and kind of peeking in the door to see if he was home. And if he was, the first thing I would do would be just go to my room and hide and not interact. And I would wait until he left or he went to sleep before I went out to cook my dinner or did anything. And I realized that when I was doing that, that it was my life became very small, and it became controlled by this other person who probably had no idea who was controlling my life. But I realized that once I was able to change my relationship with him, which didn't get any better, by the way, but I was able to change, like, okay, well, I can be in the same room as this person and not shy away. I can have the difficult conversations. And the same thing is true for diabetes. If we're able to recognize that the thing's not going away, I don't have to like it, but I have to figure out a way to relate to it. And relate to it doesn't mean avoid. It means actually being there with it and interacting. And when you're able to do that, all of a sudden the world changes, because now you have the ability to be free and flexible to do the things that you want to do, even with this condition with you. Even with this roommate living with me, I could still like have friends over. And was it uncomfortable? Sure. Of course it was. But just because something's uncomfortable doesn't mean it has to stop you from living your life.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. It's an interesting thought, because I am always thinking about, you know, specific words. When I was growing up, I was a constant follower, followed everyone. I never made choices for myself. It was all the choices that I always made was for someone else. And it took me a long time to get out of that constant terrible pattern and like put myself first. And I remember when I was diagnosed at 25 in 2007, I was like in denial, like for three straight years. Like I just, it was like, okay, whatever. And I dealt with it. I dealt with the condition based off of what I was doing in that specific moment, not strategically planning, not thinking about the day to day, not thinking about what do I have going on tonight? What was my exercise like today? Okay. And I need to change my dosage because I just did X, Y, and Z. Like I didn't understand any of that stuff. And I wasn't even in a place to be able to strategically start thinking about that because I was in such denial. I was like, I'm a three sport athlete. I'm a big time, you know, I was a big time athlete in college. Like nothing can stop me. And that was like literally my thought process for 3 years. And I just wish that I had individuals like yourself. I wish I had individuals in the community that have helped me grow so much as collaborations that I'm doing, all these great people, because I wouldn't have been in denial for 3 years and maybe taken years off my life.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're in a place now where you're doing better.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
But yeah, denying diabetes, or maybe a better way of saying it is not accepting that you have diabetes. It's just, all it does is it makes it more challenging. It's like trying to push a brick wall and move a brick wall. And when you do that, you're just tiring yourself out and making the brick wall more in your face. If you're able to accept that there's a brick wall in front of you, then you can actually figure out a way around it, as opposed to doing something that's just going to constantly keep you tired and exhausted. And, you know, not thinking about something makes you think about it a whole lot more.
Yeah. I'm curious if there's like when you're working with someone, this would be a really good thing for a lot of the listeners that are struggling with diabetes mentally. Mm-hmm. What are some things that we can tell ourselves, like words or whatever, that's going to be positive affirmations or positive things that we can say when we start feeling ourselves going down that mental roller coaster?
Yeah, well, so I think a couple things. The first is remembering that, you know, life is full of ups and downs. It's true for everybody, not just for people with diabetes. I think that sometimes we start to think that diabetes lives in some sort of silo, and that when things are challenging for us, that everyone else is living this great life and we are so burdened. And the reality is that anxiety and stress and burnout and all that stuff is that people experience that with diabetes, but also without diabetes. And that when we think about diabetes, oftentimes we don't remember the strengths that we have outside of it. And actually they work together. And so keeping in mind that you're able to, if you're able to manage the difficult conversation at work, or you're able to deal with your kids at home, that those same skills apply to life with diabetes. Diabetes is not separate from that. And so you ask yourself, how can I use the skills and the strengths that I have outside of diabetes inside of my life with diabetes? Also, remember that when you're in a tough spot, and we're all there at times, I certainly am as well with diabetes, that those times don't last forever. And if we believe that they do, then it makes things pretty dark. But it's kind of like, I like to use the metaphor of thinking about your CGM graph. And if you have a CGM, and even if you're having a great day or an awful day for that matter, but you have a flat line, and it feels like it's never moving. But if you actually scroll your finger over the graph on your phone, you'll see that the numbers are constantly going up and down. You know, you go from 110 to 115 to 105. And so it's actually never straight. And the same thing is true for our emotional state with diabetes. It's like, yes, you can say, I'm in a constant state of burnout. And I don't quite buy that. I really don't, because burnout, sometimes you're feeling burned out. But the thing is, there are also some times when you're not. And those times can be, you know, hour by hour. So paying attention to, right now I'm feeling pretty good, right now I'm feeling not so good. Paying attention to that is super important. I was a couple of weeks ago, I had hurt my back skiing. I was having a really hard time moving around. I mean, it was painful. Sleeping was awful. Walking was awful. And luckily I have a great chiropractor. He helped me out. Now I'm right now, knock on wood, I'm pain free. And so, and yesterday somebody asked me, how's your back? And I had to think for a minute, like, oh, that's right. 2 weeks ago, I was in pretty bad pain, but right now I feel great. And I had actually forgotten that my back had hurt until he brought it up. And I had to think about that. And, but when I was in the moment of in that pain with my back or in that anxiety or burnout with diabetes, it feels like that's all that's there. And you have to remember that is all that's, maybe it's, that's what's happening right now. But in the whole scheme of things, it's actually not, it's going to change. It sucks now, but tomorrow it may not suck as bad. And I think that kind of having that perspective is so important for us.
Yeah, I love that. I love that perspective because it is like looking not just at the present, but also looking at the future as well. And
seeing a context.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. And it's interesting too, because as human beings, we are like, at least maybe in America, we're so hyper-focused on the present and not looking at like what happened previously and how can I reflect and take from those experiences? What's happened? What's potentially going to happen in the future? What do I want to happen in the future? And let's plan for that. We're just so focused, hyper-focused as being here in the present, which isn't a bad thing. It's just like when we are emotionally in these emotional roller coasters, I love what you said about that.
Well, and what happens, you know, on the flip side of that is that you think about what is anxiety or depression or burnout or distress around diabetes. And all of those things are not actually happening in the present moment. They're happening in our head. And usually in our head, when we're thinking about the past, we're thinking about the future. And so yes, it's actually important to be present in the present moment, because right now is the only time where you can actually behave and do anything. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything about the past, and you can ruminate about it, but that's not helpful. Mm-hmm. You can also be worried about the future, and certainly planning for things with diabetes is super important. Don't get me wrong, but if you're worried about what's going to happen in the future, that's completely unattainable right now. You can't grasp onto that. And all it does is allow for your thoughts and your worries to snowball. But by staying in the present moment, you can actually make decisions. You can be intentional and you can behave and do something to change things in your life with diabetes. Not always your emotions or your thoughts, but certainly your blood sugars and your behavior. You have the most control. Actually, you really only have control right here, right now. Certainly not in the past and not in the future.
That's an interesting thought process. I didn't really think about it in terms of the future perspective, because I've spent my entire life looking at the past and not strategizing or looking at what do I actually want from tomorrow? What do I actually want to accomplish tomorrow? What do I need to accomplish tomorrow? What do I want to accomplish in 5 years? I didn't always do that. And it's interesting to hear your thought process and that perspective of, yeah, that's great to think about that, but at the end of the day, you can't control that in the here and now. You can only control what you're doing right now. That's just a really interesting perspective.
Well, and I think that there's a nuance there, right? Because of course you want to plan for the future, and that's a really healthy and important thing to do. But to worry about the future, you know, to say, okay, well, I'm going on a hike tomorrow, and my blood sugar is going to crash while I'm hiking, and I'm not going to have the supplies that I need. And all of a sudden, you know, the possibility of what's happening or what could happen, you get in your head about that. And then it takes your anxiety and it becomes a story that just explodes and is not really helpful. Now, on the flip side, thinking about the future, okay, I'm going on a hike tomorrow. I need to make sure that I have a backpack that has my glucose meter and maybe an extra, insulin pump, extra pod, and maybe 100 grams of glucose. That's really helpful to think about it and to plan for and to hope for and to make sure it happens. But then when you talk about the more abstract things, the what ifs and the what could be's and the disasters that are going to happen without any basis in reality, that's where things really go awry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, man, that's interesting. It's just going back to what you said You said a phrase in there that just aligns so much with me all the time. And that's like the story that you tell yourself. Is it that positive story or is it that negative story? Is it a story that's going to help you take five steps forward, or is it a story that's going to make you stay in the present and then in the past?
Well, and the important distinction there is the story grounded in reality? Is it grounded in fact, or is it something that is that you are making up that is actually not really helpful?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I want to go back real quick because you were talking about burnout earlier, and I think a lot of people get hung up on burnout, diabetes burnout. I think about burnout in different levels, right? And I'd love to hear your perspective on what you think burnout is, if it's like something that, because when a lot of people hear burnout, at least the conversations I've had with young kids, adults, whoever it might be, they hear burnout and it's like this negative connotation where sometimes like I get burnt out and I'm like, man, I'm just going to go MDI. I need to be off a CGM. I need to be off my insulin pump for, 10 hours because it's just been so much for the past, month or whatever, however long it is. Where on the flip side, burnout where, all right, I'm just going to be in denial because I can't deal with all this anymore. I don't want to deal with it anymore. It's just too much. It's just too much. What is your thoughts about burnout? And you alluded to a little bit earlier, but what are some things that people can kind of say to themselves or do to maybe bring themselves out of burnout if they're really deep into it? I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
I hate the word burnout.
Yeah. Okay.
And I want to be clear. The idea of diabetes burnout is very real.
Yeah.
I'm not saying by any means that it's not, but I don't like the word burnout. And here's why. It's because it becomes a catch-all for everything that people hate about diabetes or everything that's stressful about diabetes.
Yeah.
So it's not really, it's from my point of view as a psychologist, it's actually not helpful at all. What I want to know is, what is causing you to feel this way? But more importantly, actually, what are you actually feeling? When you say burnout, it's like saying, I feel, I feel fine. I mean, and those are actually opposite, but it's a very vague thing to be saying. How are you doing? I'm fine. I'm feeling so burned out. Well, so are you tired? Are you anxious? Are you frustrated? Those are actually more helpful things for me to help be able to help you, but also for you to be able to help yourself. Because if you say, I feel burned out, it's really hard. It's actually really hard to take action and not feel burned out. But if you say, I'm feeling frustrated right now because my blood sugar is 250 and I can't get it down, and I'm tired of giving myself insulin constantly, then we can find some ways to problem solve with that, both on the emotional level, but also on the diabetes management level. When you say you feel burned out, that's like this, it's like a bunch of goo that you can't actually grab onto and like nothing to do to fix it or to be able to even move forward there. That's my soapbox about the word burnout. But let's talk about what the symptoms of burnout are. Feeling frustrated about diabetes, feeling tired, feeling like you need a change, feeling like it's never ending. Those things, you can see that goes from, this big umbrella term to things that are actually much more tangible and understandable to me as a clinician, as to me as a person with diabetes and this, and to somebody else in your life who can actually help you to deal with it. I'm sick and tired of having to count my carbs. Okay, great. So maybe your wife can count carbs for you for a couple of days. I'm sick and tired of having to constantly hear my CGM or looking at my watch all the time and hearing it alert me. Well, okay, well then take your watch off. I mean, see, we want to find tangible ways that people can actually do things, as well as how can I deal with these difficult feelings? And in order to deal with difficult feelings, you have to be able to identify them. And burnout's not a feeling. Burnout's like it's a big umbrella. It doesn't nothing to grab onto. So that being said, what do you do about it? Well, I think that one is the first thing is I love what you said, Ken, is giving yourself some slack for a couple of days, you know, whether that's changing how you're managing your diabetes, going from pump to MDI, whether it's, you know, just setting your alerts on your CGM, you know, a lot more liberally, so you're not hearing the alerts all the time, or even taking your CGM off for a little while. You know, we don't want to do anything that's going to cause you to go into DKA. So make sure you take your basal insulin and make sure you have your insulin pump on, whatever, however you're managing. But, you know, I think it's a misconception that if I have a high blood sugar, that is somehow dangerous. And the reality is that, you know, we all have high blood sugars, and that, you know, even if you have a 300 or 400, you know, for a little while during a day or for a couple of days, it's not going to hurt you long term. As long as you have basal insulin in your body, as long as you have a pump that's giving you basal insulin, or as long as you're taking your shot of Lantus or Levemir or Tresiba, whatever you're taking, you're going to be safe. But we want you to be, and that's critically important. But if you have a high blood sugar, if you go off the rails for a little bit, for a couple of days, that's okay. As long as that is a discrete period of time. I think where people get in trouble is that they say, well, I'm tired, I'm taking a break, and that break lasts for, you know, more than, you know, goes a week or 2 weeks, a month, and people are just, you know, then just like with anything, it's hard to get back on track. You stop exercising for a little while, it's hard to get back on track. You stop, you know, manage your diabetes for a little while, it becomes really hard to, like, get that motivation to get back in the groove of it. And so, but yeah, breaks are necessary. The last thing I want to say is, even though I'm going to use the word burnout here, even though I said I don't like it, but burnout is actually a normal part of life, and the normal part of life with diabetes. And so if you feel burnt out, or if you feel, you know, the specific symptoms of burnout that we talked about before, don't get down on yourself. You know, they don't feel good. I don't want to tell you they're going to feel good, but, you know, you did nothing wrong, and there's nothing wrong with you. Nothing intrinsically wrong with you feeling that way. So I think that a lot of people feel that they feel this way, and then they feel guilt and shame for feeling this way. And then that actually just makes the burnout or the symptoms of burnout even worse. And so recognizing that burnout is normal, and we all experience it, and it wasn't caused by something that you did, is an extremely important thing to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I want to take a step in. I'd love to hear, we've talked a lot about the mindset piece, the burnt out piece, the different words that we're saying to or the things that we say to ourselves and the power that has. I'd love to hear, like, Mark, what your philosophy is. Like, when you are sitting down with a client, a patient, and you're talking with them, what is your philosophy when it comes to mindset, conscious coaching, whatever you are labeling your profession or your coaching as? What is your philosophy?
Yeah, so I like to think about that in terms of, what does success look like for somebody with diabetes who I'm working with?
Gotcha.
And what success looks like is not never feeling burnt out, anxious, frustrated, upset, or anything. It's not, success is not feeling calm all the time and in a zen state in the life of diabetes. Success is having the skills to be able to handle the tough parts of diabetes, because diabetes is challenging. Diabetes sucks. I wrote a book that's called Diabetes Sucks, and you can handle it. I think that recognizing the reality that this is hard, however, that I have the ability and the skills that I need in order to handle the hard parts of it. And because if we think about success as making all of the negative emotions go away, and only feeling positive emotions, not only is that not possible and setting up for failure, but it's also really a knock on your humanity. Yeah, as humans, we're given the gift of having emotions, right? And that includes positive emotions and negative emotions. And it's part of life, whether we like it or not. And so to say that I want to live a life free of stress with diabetes is just, it's not realistic, but it's also not fair to yourself. Saying I want to live a life that with diabetes that's as stress-free as possible, but when it becomes stressful, I have the ability to handle the stress, and that I can tolerate the distress, and I have skills that I can use to be able to get through that, both mindset and also practical diabetes management skills, is really the key. So it's a matter of accepting accepting that what you can change, what you can't change, you know, recognize what you can change and having the strength to know the difference. But then taking a step forward and saying, even though things are hard, I want to be able to not let this hard thing get in my way of living the life that I want. I want to be able to do all the things that I want to do. And even though it's hard, and it's a counterintuitive way of looking at it, because, you know, people say, well, you're a psychologist. Isn't your goal to make our pain go away? And my answer is absolutely not. Like, I'm not a doctor where, you know, you go in and you have an ear infection and the goal is to get the infection to go away. I wish that were the case. I wish I had that sort of power, that sort of skill, but I just don't.
Yeah. My
job is to be able to help you to ride those waves, the good ones and the bad ones, of your life with diabetes, and to not let the stress and all of the emotional burden of it get in the way of living the life that you want to live. You know, I believe that everybody has the ability to live a great life, and that you have the that we all have great potential. And diabetes and other things in life get in our way. And so, how do we remove those barriers? Maybe not by removing the stress, but by giving you the strength and the skills to be able to navigate around it.
Hmm. When you sit down with people too, is like, do you spend time on values? On like what Absolutely. That person values and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the things, you know, people always ask me, what are patients come to you with? Like what is the biggest challenge? And I would say that the thing that people work with me most on, and that really, it's become a more specialized area for me, is fear of lows. So people who have a fear of low blood sugar and are trying to deal with that, it's really challenging. Sometimes people don't even know they have a fear of lows, and their behavior shows that they do. And what I tell them is that the reality is that overcoming a fear of lows. So, you know, for example, if you are only comfortable, and I hear this all the time, I'm only comfortable having my blood sugar above 200. And so we talk about, you know, why would you want to bring your blood sugar down? Like, how is that going to help you? And talking about like, oh yeah, well, my doctor tells me that I should, that's not helpful at all. You know, but how is dealing with this fear of lows going to help your life? How is it going to help your relationships, your work, all those things? And people come up with some great reasons. And I tell them, well, you know, working on this fear of lows is going to be, it's not going to be easy. It's going to require you to do scary things, or things that are scary for you, at least. And we have to identify the reasons why that's so important to you and why you're willing to do it. What are the values that you have that are going to keep you going? I call them leverage, like, because your doctor's praise is not going to be leverage. I promise you that.
Yeah.
It's going to be easy to say, screw that when things are scary. But when it's your kids, and being able to be there for your kids and take them to the park when they're begging you to go to the park, or whether it's your wife or your husband who really wants you to go on that vacation with them, that is where you can really find that leverage. But you can't do that without identifying what someone's values are. So values are really have to be used as leverage for doing the tough work that comes with dealing with the stress of diabetes. Because, you know, again, I wish that it was going to be as easy as taking a pill and going home. But the reality is that mental health work is tough, and it requires you to actually usually feel worse than before you feel better, because you have to do scary things that you've been avoiding.
Yeah. I've seen you post multiple times about that concept of fear of lows. And it's so interesting, because so many people have some type of fear of hypoglycemia, or hypoglycemia, because of whatever it is. And I've heard so many people say, like, yeah, I like to be at 130 or 140 because I don't like lows. And it's like, okay, I can hear what you're saying, but we need to dive into this a little bit more and figure out what's going on and the why behind that feeling. I love that you know, is that the first place you start? there's like values and then like going into that thought process?
Usually, I think the first place I usually start is before values is how is this problem impacting your life? Because we could talk about all these things, fear of lows or fear of highs or all of the dimensions of burnout and all of those things. But in the end, if that thing, that problem isn't having a negative impact on your life, then who cares? Hmm. I mean, you can feel anxious, but the anxiety is just like a feeling and it's not impacting what you're doing on a daily basis. Then like then what difference does it make? But if we're really able to help people to see, okay, like I have this fear of lows and here are the real ways it's impacting me daily. So for example, I'm not taking my full bolus of insulin, and so my blood sugar is always high. I feel awful. I was diagnosed with a complication because my blood sugar has been high. I'm constantly saying no to my kids. I'm, you know, having to avoid lunches at work or happy hours, and it's impacting my ability to advance my career or to get along with my coworkers. Those are like the real visceral challenges. And when people actually look at and see those things, they're like, wow, this is having a big impact on me. And that increases their motivation to actually change. But the thing is, I mean, I heard this great metaphor or analogy recently where, you know, there's a dog sitting on a nail and the dog was whimpering by sitting on the nail. And one guy turned to the next is like, why isn't the dog getting up and moving? And the other one said, well, it doesn't hurt enough. And so you have to ask, why aren't we making changes in our lives? And the reality is that sometimes, like, yeah, it's painful, but it's not painful enough to actually do the work to change. And so part of my role here is to help you to make that decision for yourself to see whether this problem that you have is painful enough to do the work to pay for a solution. And not any kind of manipulative way at all. We want to just actually help people to see the reality of their lives in a very clear way. And, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze here? I think that it is, but for you, maybe it's not bad enough. Maybe you haven't hit that place where you're willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations or willing to pay for coaching or for therapy. And that's okay. But let's not waste our time trying to like do it if you're not in a place where it's really going to be that bad for you, or it is that bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think about it as like, either you're ready or you're not ready. Mm-hmm. Either you're ready to do this or you're not ready to do this. And if you're not, no worries, no problem. I'm here when you are ready. That's how I kind of think about it. And it's so sad because it's hitting home with me just even being in the fitness industry for so long and seeing people with like, you know, drinking problems or seeing people with smoking problems and they want to make these changes, but then they don't. Or a lung patient going to get a transplant and then as soon as the transplant was over, they're right back outside smoking again. Mm-hmm. It's like that crazy thought process. Like, hey, well, you haven't hit rock bottom. And I like hate to think about that, like with this thought process of rock bottom, but in some cases it sounds like that's what has to happen.
Yeah. I mean, rock bottom is it's different for each person and that it appears differently for each person, but yeah, you know, you have to be in a place where, I mean, so last week I'll tell you this story. I was at the Costco gas station and I filled up my car with gas and then got back on the car and tried to turn it on and it wouldn't turn on. Oh. And I was late for it to be home and I had to go shopping and all this stuff was going on. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is awful. So anyway, long story short, I was able to push my car out of the gas station into a parking space safely. And I called AAA and they came and they said, we can fix this. We can change your battery right now for $300. And you, I could not give them my credit card fast enough. I mean, yes, $300 is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. But I was like, this is a problem that like I need fixed right now. And if it's not fixed right now, it's going to be bad. So take my money now. and so, but if it was like, if someone says, hey, you know, your brakes need to be changed at some point in the future, you know, and right now there's a 1% chance of them failing. Or maybe something like that. Like, it's not quite bad enough right now for me to take that step. But when my car wouldn't start, and I need to get home. Like, take my money. It's in some ways, you know, dealing with the mental health challenge of diabetes is the same way. You know, we want to think that people want to be preventative and that they want to, you know, not have these things happen in the first place. In an ideal world, that's the case. But in the reality is I have to hit a place where like, it's like, you know, I need this change now. I need my car to start now. And that's where we can do some things to help people see, wow, maybe this is actually the case for me right now when I wasn't actually aware of it. And all that's doing is helping them. It's helping them to see the reality of what it is and see how things can change and how they can get better.
Yeah. Well, I just love what you just said right now, which is awareness. And it's like the awareness has to be there before a real change can actually like start happening, because you have to be aware that there's even a problem in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very big thing too, this awareness thought process, because they could be talking to you. You could be saying like, oh, this is what I'm hearing you say, that there's an issue here, here, and here. And internally they could be telling themselves a story. This dude's a full crap. No, that's not a problem whatsoever. I'm not doing that. You know, right. So it's like, you know, you're not aware and you're not like ready. So what am I supposed to do here?
Well, and there also has to be an idea or a belief that things can get better. You can be aware that they suck and that things are challenging. But if I'm telling you that they can get better and you have no belief in either my ability to help you or your ability for them to change, then like that's not going to work either. Cause then you're doing the work, but in putting in the reps, but not expecting change. And then you're not doing it. You're willing to actually go through the hard stuff to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Belief, man. Whew. So many of us don't believe that something is possible. That's the other sad part about it is I know like there's been so many times in my life where it's like the belief wasn't there, even though I had the capabilities to be able to do it. I had the knowledge. I just didn't believe it could happen. And that's what holds you back. So yeah, love that. I'm curious too with all of this, with the mental capacity of diabetes, how much is it an uneducation or uneducated factor? Is that a factor that kind of comes into this as well? Because I know when I talk to people about food, when I talk to people about exercise, there is definitely a non-education, like I don't really understand that concept in those thought processes. You know, like I talked to someone the other day that they were saying they couldn't make the connection that fast food, going to fast food, McDonald's, Wendy's, all these different fast food places has a lasting impact on blood sugars, has a lasting impact on your overall health because it's fake food. And they couldn't make that distinction. So I wonder how much in your world and what you do comes down to like this person just needs to be educated.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that education is really twofold in my world. The first thing that people need to be educated about, or to make sure, well, to understand better, and this is all individual for themselves, is what diabetes is, which is, you know, I think true for all of us. And then how do I manage my own diabetes? Because if you don't know your insulin carb ratios or your basal rates, of course you're going to feel anxious and burned out.
Yeah.
Because you're shooting in the dark. You know, talking about fear of lows, like if you don't know what your insulin carb ratio is, I don't want you taking too much insulin. I don't want you, you know, overshooting that. And so you're going to be conservative. And then you get stuck in this cycle of I don't know, so I can't do. or if you don't know what your, if you don't know what your correction factor is and you're constantly correcting, but it's never coming down enough, you're going to feel, again, back to my word I don't like to use, but burnt out. You're going to feel frustrated because of that. So from a diabetes education point of view, that's the basis of mental health. If you understand, I mean, of course, not entirely, but if you understand what diabetes is and how you manage it, you're going to be in a much better place and feel a lot less anxious, frustrated, mm-hmm. and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then there's also the psychological part of it, of understanding, you know, what are the patterns of distorted thoughts that we have?
Yes.
You know, I mean, so for example, one, you know, we think about things like black or white thinking and all or nothing and snowballing. There's another one that is lesser known, but I think this is important, especially for people with diabetes, and that's called emotional reasoning. And what emotional reasoning really means in simple terms is, if I think it or if I feel it, it must be true. If I think that I'm a failure, if I think that I can't do diabetes, then that means that it's true. And if you feel that, if that's the case, then, you know, well, the thoughts come in my head, it must be the way that it is. And so educating people that, you know, emotional reasoning or thinking that things must be true if they pop in your head or if you feel them in your emotions, then, and you're able to educate them that those things actually aren't true or they don't have to be true, then that frees people up. Educating them about, you know, the prevalence of the challenges that people experience. So for example, there's new research out from the T1D Exchange that shows that 30% of people with type 1 diabetes experience a fear of low blood sugar, which impacts their ability to manage their diabetes and to do the activities in their life that they want to be doing. Okay. So that, I mean, that those are scary high numbers. However, if you're experiencing fear of lows and you feel like you're the only person that you're crazy for experiencing this, and we're able to tell you that 30% of people with diabetes, type 1 diabetes, experience the same thing that you do, doesn't make it good, but certainly it takes all the stigma off of you. So mm-hmm. education comes from all different areas and all different directions here. And it's important mm-hmm. to remember that as we're working with patients.
Yeah. I love that because it's almost like that scary number of 30% of people fear lows now becomes a positive tool that can be used to work with people. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Cool, Mark. This has been great, man. What I would love to, as we kind of like get towards the end of this, mm-hmm. I would love to hear like maybe one to three things that you could like tell the audience, those of us who struggle, whatever it might be. One to three things that you could tell the audience that someone could take like in put in action right now.
Yeah. So one thing is just remember that you're not alone, that everybody with diabetes struggles to some degree. And if they don't, they tell you that they don't, they're either like, they're lying to you. That we all, including me, including you, I'm sure you can, experience challenges, and that really the key is to be able to have the ability to ride those waves and deal with the challenges as they come. So that is number one. Number two is, you know, it's important to be able to differentiate between, you know, what you're feeling and reality. And sometimes it's not so clear. But, you know, just because you feel something or think something doesn't mean that it's true. And remember that and check yourself on those things. When you say, you know, I can't do diabetes or I hate diabetes or, you know, all of those negative thoughts that come up, especially ones that cause you to have negative emotions, like just stop for a minute, take a beat and ask yourself, you know, I know that I'm thinking that and feeling that, but how true is it? And just ask yourself that question. The more you ask yourself that question, the more you will be able to differentiate between your thoughts and feelings and the reality of the world. And do what you can. Mm-hmm. Ask a coach, ask a friend, ask a spouse to check you on your thoughts. We all have these negative thoughts, and without outside perspective, they become our reality. But with outside perspective and outside feedback, it becomes a lot, they become a lot it becomes a lot easier to be, to differentiate between what is going on there and what is not. And then finally, you know, my favorite thing to tell people is lead with action. And what I mean by that is so often we lead with emotion. And what we say is, okay, I will do X. I will go on that hike as soon as I'm not scared or worried about my blood sugar. Okay. Well, that's great, but you're probably going to be waiting a very long time. Because what you're saying is that my action is dependent on my emotions. My emotions are in charge here. And when I feel a certain way, I will do it. What if we flip the script on that and say, I'm going to lead with action. I'm of course going to be safe. I'm going to make sure that I am, you know, objectively safe in my diabetes management. However, I'm going to act even though I feel scared. I can, my fear is not going to dictate my behavior. I'm going to dictate my behavior, and my fear is going to be there with me, or my other emotions are going to be there with me. All of a sudden now, when you felt trapped before, your world is now open up and a lot more free for you, because you're calling the shots rather than your emotions, and you have control over the shots that you call. You don't really have control over your emotions, at least not in this moment. And my goal for everyone with diabetes is to be able to have control where they can and identify those areas. And your behavior is that one area where you do have control.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Mark. That's awesome, man. Yeah. This thought process of controlling your emotions is so interesting to me, because coming from someone that has struggled with that for my entire adult life almost, and thinking that like you have power to be able to control your emotions based off of one experience, two awareness, and being able to step back and inside yourself and say, do I want to deal with this? The other thing that I would love to ask you before we let you go is, I'm constantly thinking about the why behind all my emotions. And anytime I'm on that emotional roller coaster, whether it's psychological for personal reasons, career reasons, diabetes reasons, I'm always trying to be aware of like, wow, I feel so anxious right now. It's crazy. And then I step back and say, why? Why am I feeling this way? What has happened? What is happening now? What has happened in the past that's making me feel this way? What is that trigger? I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
I think that's a really helpful question, as long as you recognize that there may not always be an answer to the question.
Yeah.
You know, our emotions definitely serve a purpose. And the negative emotions generally serve the purpose of trying to keep us safe. However, sometimes they do too good of a job at that. They do too good of a job, and so they stop us in our tracks from doing what we want to do, even though it is safe. So, identifying the reasons why you're feeling it, and maybe even starting by asking yourself, you know, is this emotion trying to keep me safe, and is following the emotion, like allowing that emotion to dictate my behavior, actually keeping me safe, or is it an illusion of safety? Is a helpful thing. And that's true for other emotions that may not really be safety emotions, but just for other reasons. You know, I'm excited to see my kids. So this excitement, is that helpful for me or not? Well, yeah, it is helpful. In most cases, however, I think that by spending too much time analyzing and trying to figure out where the emotion's coming from, especially if there's not an obvious answer or one that you have one that you can figure out, you know, I don't want to say don't work on it, but you can get lost in your head and intellectualize and rationalize all kinds of things. And then get mad at yourself because you can't figure out where this emotion's coming from. And then, you know, then all kinds of other problems happen. So the answer is yes, it's helpful, but we also can't control our emotions. Sometimes emotions come out of nowhere. I mean, you can imagine, I'm sure that we've all been there. I know that I have, where, you know, just you're sitting watching TV or something, and all of a sudden you feel sad for no good reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason you can mm-hmm. identify. And, you know, you can certainly ask yourself, why am I feeling sad? But if you can't identify the reason why, and there's nothing happened externally to you, then is it really worth worrying about, especially if that emotion passes? So the answer is yes, but you got to be careful.
Yeah. I like that, because you also mentioned anxiety, or you mentioned being safe. So my next question for you, because I just thought about this and now I'm like, my wheels are spinning about it, is when we feel anxious, when someone feels anxious, is that always, is the thought process and the feelings and the symptoms of feeling anxious, is that from a negative perspective, something negative maybe that happened emotionally, physically, whatever it might be?
Not necessarily. I mean, anxiety is actually a good thing.
Okay.
I mean, anxiety is a good thing in a lot of ways. I mean, think about, you probably feel anxious a lot of times when you don't even know it. So for example, you get in your car, and what's the first thing you do when you get in your car? You put your seatbelt on. You're putting your seatbelt on because you feel anxious. Because what would it feel like if you drove without a seatbelt? Mm-hmm. You cross the street. Yep. What do? You look both ways. And you do that because you want to make sure that you're safe. You have a level of anxiety that is making you look both ways. Imagine if you didn't have anxiety. You would probably get in your car without putting your seatbelt on. You probably walk out in the street without looking both ways. You'd probably, bolus 20 units for your meal because you didn't want to count the carbs. Like, you know, anxiety is actually a really helpful thing. It's when anxiety becomes, you know, it goes from a being a safety behavior, a behavior that's going to keep you safe, to a behavior or a way of thinking that keeps your world very small in a way that doesn't actually keep you safe. It's where it becomes a problem.
I love that. I like that. I'm stealing that. I love that, man. Cool. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Mark. This has been a fantastic, fantastic conversation with you. I'm so glad I got to do this. If someone is really resonating with like the things that you're talking about and saying, and they want to reach out, ask questions, maybe work with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way is you can either find me on Instagram at the Diabetes Psychologist, or you can email me at mark@thediabetespsychologist.com.
Awesome. And the last question is, if someone wants to buy your book, is it on Amazon?
Absolutely. Okay, diabetes cool. sucks and you can handle it.
Yep. So everyone, if you're still listening to this, and I imagine you are, because this has been a powerful episode, I will make sure that all of Mark's contact information is in the show notes. I'll put a link to his book. Make sure that you go and check those things out. If you have questions, if you feel anxious, if you're, you know, struggling with your emotions, please reach out to Mark. He's a fabulous, fabulous resource in the diabetes community. I've been watching him and like watching what he's like talking about and just like eating up all the great things that he's saying for a long time. So I really push you guys to, if you're listening, to go and just reach out to him and ask him questions, because like you heard in this conversation, we're all struggling with something. So reach out to him and ask questions. Mark, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for being there or being here. Everybody, I will see you guys next time.